From TomDispatch.com, this is TomCast, interviews and insight from Tom Dispatch contributors for anyone seeking a deeper understanding of our post-9/11 world and a clear sense of how our global imperial system actually works. I'm Timothy McBain. Recently, I had the pleasure of speaking again with Chip Ward, a grassroots organizer and activist and author of Canaries on the Rim and Hope's Horizon. We talked about the complexities of our ecosystem and how our environment is slipping out of balance. I think most of the time we see natural disasters framed as isolated incidents, but your article shows how they're all connected as part of an ecosystem out of balance that is it's shifting to greater extremes. Can you talk a little bit more about that, for example, like how fires and floods are connected?
Well, everything in nature happens in a kind of a feedback loop. It's a very complex and reciprocal system out there. So normally, a flood would increase the growth that eventually dries out, that fuels the fire. And if the fire is hot enough and starts removing brush and grasses and plants that slow the flow, or if the fire is so hot that the soil becomes crusted and water resistant, then the next round of floods is even bigger. So in the past, when our weather was a little bit more benign and predictable, that cycle was pretty manageable. It seems to be less and less so today.
Looking back historically, can you talk about the speed at which climate is changing compared to what you said was much more predictable in the past? When did it start changing? How fast is it changing?
You know, Timothy, I don't know if I could really tell you that. I can tell you that in my own lifetime, I've seen changes. Now, of course, the critique of that is that, you know, the 30 or 40 year span that I can talk about in my personal experience is just a very, very thin slice of a larger time frame. But it's very clear that the weather is becoming hotter. We're breaking records for heat. We're now having 100 year floods, it seems, every decade. Out here in the West, our forest fires have very definitely gotten bigger, more frequent, harder to contain. There's drought, there's flood, there's every kind of extreme out there, and I think extreme is the key word here. The seasonal swings seem to be harder and sharper than they ever were. Last winter, for example, southern Utah, where I live, got a lot more snow than northern Utah, which is where all the ski resorts are. Some shift in the weather happened, and we got their snow. This year, we both got dumped on us. Some of the watersheds here are 700% of normal. We're spiking awfully hard, and it's very difficult to live your life, and to, especially if you're a farmer, if you're dealing with that kind of uncertainty.
And how are the farmers dealing with it? Are they trying to use technology as opposed to advocating for controlling the pollutants that are causing climate change and things like that?
Well, you know, everybody is looking at their small picture, and we disagree on the big picture. Unfortunately, I think farmers are just very busy right now wondering when they're going to get into their fields and plant. A lot of people here, even people who weren't dealing with flood or groundwater, found that it was the spring weather hung on cold for a long time. It was hard to plant anything here. And then, of course, if you don't have enough water, if your water gets shut off early, then you miss your last hay crop or whatever. You can't grow grain with that rain, and you can't plant seeds in a flooded field.
Going back to the fires in Arizona that you talk about, wildfires in California have long been, you know, just a regular occurrence. What's the difference between the California fires and what's happening in Arizona right now?
Oh, I don't think much, except for the fact that when you have a fire in California, you involve a lot more people and a lot more property, since the interface between civilization and wilderness in California is getting pretty crowded. In Arizona, fortunately, the wildfire was in an area that was sparsely populated. I live in an area that's sparsely populated, and I don't want to imply for a moment that those folks aren't important. When the forest fire comes your way, it's your whole world is at stake. But these areas are more remote than the areas in California where there are usually fire. What they have in common is that they can now occur all year round, I would say with a short exception in the winter here. And the scale, they're much bigger than they ever were before.
In our previous conversations, you've told me about successes that you've had in Utah, protecting land, protecting resources and the environment. How do you see those kind of successes being taken and applied at a national level, or hopefully a global level?
Well, in Utah right now, we're still arguing over land that should or should not be designated as wilderness, and what kind of compromises we're ready to make in preserving and conserving wild lands out here. We haven't had much help lately from the Obama administration. They seem to be off on a pretty sour course as far as conservation is going. I think that Bruce Babbitt, just the former Interior Secretary, just commented in the New York Times on that. But, you know, the struggle goes to conserve these ecosystems because they're already under stress. Many of them have been reduced and fragmented. They're really all we have left. They're irreplaceable. You know, you can't go out and buy a new one. China isn't making them. Yeah, so you need to deal with what you've got left and understand that it is very vulnerable. Fire is just one of the really tragic things that's going on right now in our wild lands. So conserving it, conserving watersheds, protecting the biodiversity, all of those struggles take on that context, that framework of what's at stake in a world where the climate is changing all the time and putting stresses on ecosystems.
There was a question I asked Michael Clare in a conversation recently, and I'd like to ask you the same question, which is, there must be some tipping point at which people realize, okay, this has gone too far. But it hasn't been the natural disasters we've witnessed. It hasn't been the scientific proof that things are changing and that this is a disastrous path. It hasn't even been the wars we've gone to over natural resources. Where do you see that tipping point occurring?
I don't know. I mean, I think like a lot of other people who are concerned, I wait for it and hope for it. But I don't know where it will occur. You know, the science in trying to make the arguments about why we should conserve these stressed-out ecosystems, I find that if you confront somebody who disagrees with you with the facts, very often it just entrenches them. I think it has to be based on personal experience, and I think as the weather changes and we experience more and more floods, tornadoes, hurricanes, droughts, and so forth, more and more people will become convinced that there is a problem, that they're not exempt from it, and that we need to address them. And hopefully, at that point, we all start coming up with some good ideas about how to get off our carbon addiction. Right now, I got to say, honestly, sometimes we, out west here, they're now asking to drill in some of the last few really beautiful and pristine areas available. And it's like our need for energy is insatiable. And we're a little like an addict who is tearing the house apart, looking under the couch cushions for that piece of crack he might have dropped. It's really kind of hard to take sometimes. But, you know, the alternative to that is to sit back and to watch it happen. I just don't feel I can do that. I feel like I have grandchildren at this point, and I have to act responsibly for them. So we're all going to keep struggling. We're all going to hope, but we're reaching that tipping point at some point. And we're going to have to just have faith that if we make our case, take the actions that we do, change our own lives, learn, talk to each other, at some point we're going to get there.
To read Chip Ward's article, How We Lost the West, The American West is a Burn Zone, please visit tomdispatch.com. You can also read more from Chip at chipwardessays.blogspot.com. I'm Timothy McBain, and until we meet again, thanks for listening.